FU Network. Yeah, it's about an attitude, but FU stands for us. Us, regular people, making the type of authentic, honest, down-to-earth programming that big media stomped out of existence. Well, our message to big media is FU. Come on, join the team. Reclaim our media for the common people. Become a supporter for $5 a month via Patreon or PayPal. Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. That's Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Come on, $5 a month? That's $1.50 a week to rebuild real Canadian media. You drop more than that every day on overpriced coffee. Yeah, you do. So if you like our podcasts, tell big media FU and cough up a fin. Now, here's your show.
As far as these boys are concerned, well, hamburgers and hot dogs are their idea of a really good meal.
Hello and welcome to Face the Music. I'm Ed the Sock. Joining me are Eric Alper. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Ed. How are you, man?
I'm great. You always sound so happy.
I am happy. This is, we're living in a global pandemic and we're talking about music. What could be more important?
I'm talking about a global pandemic, probably. But, what the hell am I to judge? And also joining me, not always sounding upbeat, is Ben Rayner. Hello, Ben.
I feel upbeat today. I was actually trying to impress my 3.5-year-old daughter with the fact that I was talking to Ed the Sock tonight after she went to bed. Even showed her the puppet, not impressed. Nothing. Nothing, Ed.
I know.
Nothing. The younger generation has lost it.
I know. They have no respect for culture.
I was like, Ed the Sock, look at the sock. No, nothing. Nothing. Come on, it's the sock. Anyway,
kids,
to be back.
Kids don't appreciate puppets anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why I appeal to adults nowadays. Good thing it's a good thing Sherry Lewis is dead, because Lamb Chop would just be falling on hard times, drinking hooch, all this other shit.
I feel like Lamb Chop's best days were well behind her, long before Sherry Lewis left the earth.
Did Lamb Chop ever have best days?
Lamb Chop did not have good days.
I hated that puppet. All right, so today we're going to talk about whether artists who have had significant record sales in the past or have won awards, whether any of that means anything anymore. I'll go first to get the positive spin on it. Let's go over to Eric. Eric, does it mean anything anymore?
Yeah, absolutely. But you knew I was going to say that. Look, you know how we track music consumption in the streaming era is so important now, because although that the Billboard Hot 100 is supposed to capture the week's most popular current songs across all styles of music, what we're finding in the last couple of years is that it's completely dominated by hip hop and rap and R&B and soul music. And that's the truth. That is what people are listening to. And that causes cultural shifts and economic shifts. And sometimes, what happens in music is directly affects everything else. It affects the kind of music that's being placed in movies and films, and that affects culture. But, I think when you're talking about the sheer amount of charts that are out there, there's almost a Billboard chart for every single style of music. And why not being able to champion the fact that you've had a success on a chart in your own genre of music or your own style of music? So although that, I think the industry, which is, always one step in the past and one tiny toe in the future, we still rely on chart to be able to pitch people like Ben Rayner and other media outlets and say that this song just cracked the top 10 on this chart. And as long as they think that it's important, then, it'll always be important to me to have it.
So you're saying basically that you use charts to impress people who are still analog and dinosaurs, and the only way that they can accurately get a sense of whether something's popular or not is through the old style way of ranking things, which is those charts. Is that what you're saying?
Well, to a certain extent, you can take a look at the Spotify most played chart, and that's a pretty accurate portrayal of what people are really listening to. That's not weighed by, this record sold in this hip store, in this hip market, and it's weighed differently than if you were to sell a record at Walmart in Ohio, for instance. I mean, the billboard way of doing it is still a little bit wonky. But, you know, when gatekeepers at record labels and radio and streaming services and TV shows and movie studios all
Where'd he go?
I don't know. What happened there?
I think the bullshit meter went off.
Yeah, we lost him. I thought it was me.
No, you're still here. Eric. Yeah. Eric, come back to us, Eric. All is forgiven.
That was weird. It was like a slow fade, too. It was kind of eerie. Sort of like, he dissolved?
Like the digital gods determined they didn't want to hear anymore.
Yeah, it was like he vanished into another dimension. That was a really eerie kind of, just a slow fade.
Yeah,
it was like I thought it was me. I thought someone was calling into my phone or something.
There you are.
Eric, we lost you.
Oh, how's this?
Good. Are you feeling okay?
Yeah, no.
Are you experiencing missing time?
I'm overwhelmed by charts. I'm being buried by charts.
Oh, no. Ben's convinced you were just abducted by a UFO.
BTS while I was insulting them.
All right, so we've heard from Eric. Ben, tell him why he's wrong.
Well, I do agree with Eric. I think the streaming era has painted a very good picture of what people can afford Spotify or Apple Music or whatever are listening to. Who want to subscribe to a streaming service? So that's trends in one way. I'm sure the minor resurgence of vinyl would track to a different demographic. You know what I mean? It's like, it's probably like a lot of affluent white kids, you know what I mean? Versus people, the urban audiences. But I've always viewed charts back from, like, even when I was like a kid, I knew they were kind of bullshit, but I would listen to on WQDY out of Calais, Maine. They would do the Casey Kasem top 40. And it was just kind of fun. It's a sport. It's like watching award shows. You know, like, I don't really care, but you can kind of like, you can get into it, right? A few glasses of wine, and it's like, I hope Beyonce takes it over Taylor Swift or whatever.
Yeah.
Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for those stars. I'm Casey Kasem.
Yeah, no, you know what I mean? It was just like, wow, how high is Peter Gabriel's In These Arms going to make it this week? And, you know, it's like, this. We were listening to one, actually. We came back from Bruce Benitez last weekend. It was like a rebroadcast of some countdown from 1983, I think, on one of the 80s channels on Sirius. It was just kind of fun. It was like I heard a bunch of garbage, but there was also like, you know, a few gems. It was just whatever, a mirror of that week's chart in 83. And that, for those kind of archival purposes, I think that's kind of cool. And I do think, again, it's just like, I don't care if like the Washington Capitals are playing the Flames or something, but I can pick a team and get into it. And I always felt like that was kind of, because charts are always a little bit, you know, Eric just said, in this day, it's more voodoo than ever. It's sort of back to the day when you just, I'm just going to call in. Thanks for the suitcase of cocaine. I'm going to call in and say I played this 500 times this week. Now it's like equivalent to album units. It's like always voodoo. And even when they went to SoundScan, it's like, oh, this is a very accurate way of tracking. It's like, but none of the indie shops were on SoundScan. Yeah, right. So you're getting like what Walmart and Best Buy and places, they're just like Sam Goody, Music World or whatever are selling. It is a good barometer of what mass culture, like monoculture, is into. And I think we should discuss this on previous episodes.
But there's no monoculture.
Here is how you cling to a monoculture. You know what I mean?
But do you remember when SoundScan and Nielsen first started with the Billboard chart in 91? It seemed country music was everywhere. I mean, that was
and everybody
true,
started to
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone was debuting at number. It was like Skid Row's "Slave to the Grind" or something. Debuted at number one, right? There was like a huge upset right away, and that was kind of cool. I mean, it did democratize it to some extent, but it was again representative of who was buying records and CDs in those days and cassettes at those stores that were on. You know, it's never going to be an accurate thing. It's just kind of fun. I mean, like Billboard has got a chart for everything, and that's to address the point earlier made where publicists like Eric in the day would throw something like, "Oh well, he reached number
38 on the Heat Seekers chart. Your modern rock Heat Seekers. Like, there's a lot of rock Heat Seekers. Modern rock, you know what I mean?
He's number 7 on the spoken word chart.
Adult alternative. It doesn't make any sense. But so that's kind of, I think, lost meaning over time. But it is a good, like, in the day, it's like, wow, that charted, that went to number 1 in Czechoslovakia? I guess I'll give it a, maybe I'll give it a spin
I'm
over.
Huge in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Area.
Yeah, and you know, back in the 80s, when, you look, even back in 1964, when the Beatles, you know, had half of the top 10 back in 1964, it meant something. It just meant the complete dominance of that group, because at the time, you were only releasing one single every, you know, 2 months or 3 months. With the Beatles in the entire top 5, it showed the absolute staying power of that group at the time when nobody was able to do that. And then you fast forward to the 80s when Whitney Houston and Janet Jackson and Madonna and Michael Jackson, and even in the 90s with Katy Perry having 5 top 10 singles from the same album. It showed just the absolute dominance that that artist had in the chart this year. What does it mean when Drake has 25 songs on the Billboard Hot 100 when Scorpion comes out? It's almost like that's the knock that I get when I'm on Twitter and posting about, you know, this person has, you know, 7 songs in the top 20. People are like, yeah, but it doesn't mean anything. It's like, but then I always have to say, well, a chart is a chart. Nobody puts an asterisk beside a home run record if they happen to play in a baseball stadium that moves their fences 15 feet closer than Yankee Stadium. A chart is a chart, and a historical fact, it's a fact that Drake happened to have 25 songs on there. I think when it starts to get wonky is when the BBC and the UK actually took Ed Sheeran's songs off of the chart when his last album came out, not the one that just came out, not number 6, but the one earlier, because he was dominating that chart for so long that it was stopping other record labels from working songs because they couldn't get their new artists onto that chart. So that's
why you paying attention to those charts.
But
we do, because that's the game. But again, it's like, oh, I got to get those top 10 records. Nobody says that. I never said that. Even like in dumb kid was like, oh, you'd like, you know, listening to Casey Kasem. Like, that one was like, I gotta get that Sheila E. record and everything else in the top 40. Like, it's not,
you know, you went out and got that Sheila E. record.
I did get that. I actually met Stacey Q. You know what? I had Stacey Q in my head and said Sheila E. Okay, remember Stacey Q? What was that one?
Two of Hearts.
Yeah, Two of Hearts. Thank you.
And I know
there we go. We share a brain, boys.
And I know that Eric has the Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam album as well.
We were listening to Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam on the way down from the Bruce.
On purpose?
Awesome. No lie.
The radio broken.
Yeah, no, it was enjoyable. I enjoy the 80s. It was my decade.
Hey, I love 80s music too. But I have to say that Eric was saying about the UK label or UK charts taking Ed Sheeran off, I think, because he was dominating the charts, I think that that is tragic and a travesty. Not that they took him off, but that he was dominating charts because Ed Sheeran is shit on a stick. I hate Ed Sheeran. I don't understand Ed Sheeran. I don't know what voodoo god he sold himself to that people like it. I hate Ed Sheeran.
It's boring. He's too boring to hate. That's the thing. I've sat in an arena a couple of times and watched it. It's just like, it's always likable. It's not awful. That's the thing. It's just, that's the best thing I can say about that kind of stuff. It's like, which usually appeals to the broadest spectrum of like moms and daughters. And you know what I mean? It's just like, it's inoffensive and it's not awful though. You're there and you're like, oh, he's really earnest. He's really likable, but it's not good.
No, but that's
generally what rises to the top on the chart.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, once the music industry forgets about you know, girls and women, they're screwed. I mean, we've seen that time and time again that, you know, they completely, you know, consume more music than ever before. You know, and it's, you take a look at the chart of The Weeknd and Post Malone or Beyonce or Bieber, and you go to one of their shows, it's like 70-75% women to men.
Eric, I didn't mean that as a pejorative either. I've had a conversation, I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was, who's the kid who signed to Warner? Scott Hellman. And he was like, I think he'd written his first album. He's like, I like his songs. Like, kind of a little Paul Simon loving cutie. But he was like, I just discovered, I was like, he's like, I wanted to write pop music. And people were like, oh, that's for girls. He's like, why wouldn't you want to write music for girls? Like, it's half the population. So I don't, like, I would never, so when I say something like that, I don't mean it in that regard. Because, if you're ignoring the ladies, you've got a problem, because you'll never sell records.
No, it's, unless you're like, true. You know, they're also Gwar. The most, well, yeah, because Gwar is a mega hit. But it's not only do they buy these albums and buy the music. I have never known a fandom more ardent and devoted than girls to the artists that they love. I mean, you see it now with their love of these K-pop bands and these British boy bands. But even back in the day when I would make fun of Backstreet Boys, oh, did I get emails? And it wasn't from guys. Only very okay, like maybe, you know, once in a while there would be an email from a guy complaining. But mostly it was guys saying, yeah, I fucking hate them too. But girls, oh my God, the syrupy defenses that they made of the Backstreet Boys, these are metastasized crushes, really, teenage crushes. And that makes very, very good money for the artists.
It's totally wrong. Like, music criticism has been historically dominated by boys. So the fact that stuff like that gets dismissed as something less is basically a male conceit. So, you know what, it took me a while in my 20s when I would go to, like, I remember going to see the Backstreet Boys at the Robert Gauquin Arena in Hull, Quebec, across from Ottawa, and just being horrified. But you get over it after a while, and you're like, you know what, this is giving a lot of people pleasure, and it's like, it's not, I'm a guy, I don't get it. But it's like, but I, you know, like, I think I lost that arrogance, hopefully in my early 20s, where it was like, I'm a guy, I don't get this. You can say, I'm a guy, I don't get this, but you're not dismissing it, right? And that's the thing, every experience is just as bad. Somebody out there loves everything, and their experience is not diminished because we don't get it. So I think to dismiss pop music because it's, you know, favored by females is a bit idiotic.
Well, first of all, I think that what you're describing is called the Stockholm syndrome.
I've been at this a while.
Yeah, and I don't think pop music gets dismissed because it's for girls. That's a dumb way, a dumb reason to dismiss it. It gets dismissed because it's vapid and shallow and formulaic and doesn't say anything new, and it just plays upon the same old beats over and over and over again. But you know what? I have a hard time criticizing people who do that because they make money. There's obviously an audience out there for it because most people are like flies attracted to shit. They just—they don't really have avant-garde tastes. They just want stuff that's more or less the same with a slight twist. Wouldn't you agree, Eric?
No, because I think, you know, even back in the 80s when I was watching you on Much Music, you know, 15 hours a day, you know, I'm sure that my parents...
Yeah, that's 15 hours a day. Crazy time.
Well, you know, I was obsessed with socks. But like there were, you know, I'm sure that my parents took a look at Duran Duran and Culture Club and Michael Jackson and were like, this isn't music. This is, you know, this is the third rate pop songs from the Beatles. And so no generation really admired the music of the pop music. But, you know, I think what happened with those charts though, you know, look, Katy Perry had an amazing run for a good long, you know, number of years, almost like a decade, but her last like five or six songs barely cracked the top 100. In fact, you know, there were so many songs that didn't even break the top 40. I know she's got a new album out and absolutely no slight to Katy Perry, but I think that her lack of success on the Billboard Hot 100 or the top 40 or not being able to hit top 10 affects everything when it comes to Katy Perry. It affects her magazine coverage. It affects her tour dates. It affects, you know, that whole ecosystem that is built around the chart, because she's completely right now being dominated by the Post Malones of the world when she was dominating 10 years ago. So, you know, pop music is always going to be cycles. It's always going to be hated on by the older generation. And nobody's really saying anything new. I'm sure when the Beatles came out with She Loves You, people were like, yeah, but they're no Frank Sinatra.
Well, and they weren't.
Yeah.
But that was kind of why people liked them. But, you know, okay, so there's no doubt that charts mean something to artists. As you just pointed out, Eric, how important chart position, well, sales really, mean to someone like Katy Perry.
Sales in quotes. Let's put it in quotes now. The equivalent album units or whatever the hell they're called.
Sales, which is reflected in charts, means a lot to an artist. It's whether they are the zeitgeist or whether they're yesterday. And that obviously is important to artists. But do charts really influence listeners? Do people really listen, or do people really see a chart, see the song is done well, and decide, I really want to listen to that? Or are they still finding their own shit? And is popularity, is monoculture popularity almost the kiss of death to a certain portion of the music listening audience? Ben?
Well, again, I really do. Like, I got so into it. We listened to whole fucking 40 songs on the drive down on whatever 80s on 8 with a rental van back. And, you know, you just get, you can get into it. And I always think that's like, well, I'll look at the charts. It's like I look to see what movie is number one. Go, yeah, it's an Avengers movie. I'll never see that. You know, on to the, I thought so. Or six of them are Avengers movies or whatever. But it just kind of, if you come from one perspective, then it just kind of reifies everything you thought was wrong with the whole mainstream music industry. But as Eric has pointed out, at the same time, it is kind of a cool barometer of where cultural trends are swinging, or just how people are, you know, it's what's her face, the British lady who sang, which is kind of like, I don't want to say frumpy, but you know what I mean, but that type.
Adele?
No, not Adele. She won like Britain's Got Talent or whatever, you know what I'm talking about, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that kind of thing. But you see those like weird blips, or like the White Cliffs of Dover, Rockets. Like, yeah, I know. Exactly,
Susan,
right? Because it's a blip.
Are you guys with Susan? Susan?
Susan, there you go.
Susan, yeah. It was Susan something.
Susan Boyle, there we go.
Susan Boyle.
But it's that kind of thing. I mean, but then, or like the White Cliffs of Dover rises to number one out of nowhere. And those are kind of like interesting moments. You're like, well, how did that start? And then you can kind of study the patterns of either unconscious or conscious manipulation that got it to there.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I find them interesting in that standpoint. But even, you know, again, even as an impressionable kid, when you're first thinking, the top 10, oh my God, you know, you're reading Archie comic books or whatever, and they're trying to get their single in the top 10, probably Sugar Sugar. I feel like that was the only one they ever played in the comic book. But like, you get into it, and then it's like, you kind of realize that it doesn't necessarily reflect your musical taste, but you're kind of into it. Like, I keep an eye on it. This is my job for 25 years, but even just sometimes be aghast. So it's like reading movie reviews by a critic you don't like, or by a critic you like. If you're someone who's into talk, like if you really need to know what's in the top 40, I'll do like the like Spotify top hits playlist or whatever, and it's kind of cool to see what quote unquote the kids are into, because I'm 45 now and I'm not maybe as plugged into whatever's streaming wildly. So I like, you know, it's, they're useful. It's like anything. It's like the stats can be manipulated, but it's like not a be all and all, but do I think it ever they really influence people's buying behavior? Maybe when it becomes a phenomenon and you're like, I remember like when Celine Dion and Shania Twain and Alanis were being sold at like Loblaws front rack for $9.99 in the mid-90s. That's just driving a phenomenon. And they're like, oh my God, she sold 28 million. And people are like, oh, I got to see what this is all about, because it sold 20, you know, Thriller, right? Thriller became its own thing because it was so big. And maybe people are curious, but by and large, probably, like most of us, I think, are sane enough not to go, I gotta get everything in the top 10. Everyone, everything in the top 200.
No, I bet Eric did that. Didn't you do that?
No, I didn't.
You had to buy a warehouse.
I didn't do that. But I gotta tell you, though, as a fan of music and as a fan of you know, I was and still am, you know, I'm a pretty big Phil Collins fan. But I remember being really excited and proud to be a fan. But you know, when he was climbing from like 23 to 15 to 12 to 8, you got a sense of pride and accomplishment that for some reason you picked well. You know, when REM started to break in the 80s and they went from, you know, being the indie darlings on campus.
Yeah,
radio.
Like the one I love made it to 37, I think, on the case. And you're like, yeah!
Right. It was a big accomplishment. It was like, we've won. We're winning, whoever this collective we are. But, you know, Ben, you brought up something really interesting. You know, whenever the Junos are coming around, they you know, people in the media will call me and they'll usually bring up that time in 1991 when Celine and Alanis and Shania Twain were
butt wrestling.
Huge. Yeah, they were selling. They were selling huge.
And Sarah McLachlan, they owned it, man.
And
they owned the planet.
And you know, it was almost like they don't remember whether or not there was a sense of Canadian pride because of that. And I think if we were feeling some sort of nationalistic pride then, well, I don't think we're feeling anything when we found out last week that Drake now not only has the most Billboard Hot 100 hits, he's got the most top 10 hits in music history, overtaking Madonna last week. I didn't get any sense that anybody really so much cared about that except for my tweet, you know,
But I feel like we're over it because those, all these things, they gain the streaming services so much. Like they released 28 track albums, so they're the top 20. So it ultimately renders that statistical stock taking or whatever, you know, irrelevant because they're gaining it. Yeah. And it's a talking point, but it's been a talking point. Like every Drake record comes out, break streaming records across platforms. That's been the headline for a while. It's sort of like when people stop paying attention to space launches. But yeah, I know, Drake. I know you broke another record. Great, Drake.
Yeah,
great.
Right,
but it's
right.
Like it's Drake's fatigue, perhaps. Maybe he should bomb. Then he'd have a comeback narrative, right? He needs one to just fucking crash and burn.
That's it. You see that in the Rocky movies too. But I mean, Drake's brand is breaks out, breaks records, smashes ceilings. That's his brand. So when he does it again,
that's why the records get longer and longer.
Well, he does it again. You're like, yeah, and that's just what he does. Because we're so
it's 3 hours long.
Yeah. They don't listen to it. They listen to 15 seconds of it and they go find something else. But the fact is, that's his brand. So in a way, you're right, Ben. If he were to bomb and then come back, that would be seen as a greater accomplishment than continuing to break records over and over and over again. Because it's just like, oh, that again? Yeah, so what?
I think Eric would agree. That is a narrative, but that's like an easy narrative for people in my position where you're like,
but you don't even need to bomb. You just need to go away for 2 months all of a sudden, everybody suddenly has a comeback.
But then there's always a thought, what, it only peaked at 18 on the Billboard charts. That's a 3 consecutive number ones. What should I gotta do? Yeah, you know, it's like that becomes a ready narrative. It's like, it's kind of irritating. I find those things very, it's like, she was snubbed at the Grammys. Not, you know, will she come? But it's that same, it's just sport. Again, I can pick. Like, I can watch any sporting event, except maybe American football, because I dislike American football. So, like, so much I call it American football. but I can pick any two teams in almost any event and just, like, pick a side. It's like, all right, fucking Pittsburgh, go for it, right? And you can get into it. And I feel like that's maybe, you want someone to root for something. It's nice to root for something. You know, like, you know, just casually. I don't think anyone lives it. You know those guys who live and die by the stats in the sports section. I feel like there's as many people who live and die by each week's issue of Billboard.
Those people are gamblers. That's why they live and die by the stats.
I think there are. Like that. That's the thing. I think if you were to go on social media and you see when BTS or Katy Perry, you go on those fan accounts of Katy Perry Indonesia, Katy Perry Japan, Katy Perry chart in here, they follow that like as a rule to continually hype up their artists and in fact go against other fandoms based on the success that they're having on the Billboard chart. In fact, you know, they're doing things like gaming the system of consistently, you're right, and like only listening to 20 seconds and then having automatic refresh buttons refresh the song and then playing all night, just so that their artist gets some more popularity. What I find amazing is that the charts were really designed not for the fans. They were designed for the record labels to almost justify their existence a little bit. But this year, Billboard changed their charts so that the albums that were sold as part of merchandise were not anymore going to be counted on the Billboard album chart. And that screwed up the record labels immensely because that was their last grasp of hope of perhaps selling a large amount of units physical wise, or at least downloads, in an industry where they don't you know, look, as much as I like Apple and Google and digital downloads and however people want to consume music, great by me. But the music industry was almost aghast by the fact that Billboard took this initiative out of the record label's hands. So that to me was like a kind of warning shot to the record labels from Billboard saying, we control the charts, you guys don't.
Well, again, it just points it up as all. It's always been a species of like weird chart voodoo, right? It's always just been a thing. It's a sample, an unreliable sample, like any poll. You can have differing polls from different political. It's a poll. Billboard is just one poll. Rolling Stone has their charts. Wait, you know, back in the day, remember RPM or whatever? It's what's the one in the charts? The Earshot.
Earshot one, yeah.
I know, yeah, or Acclaim. You know what I mean? Or Chart back in the day, actually, because Chart was a chart, dumb man. But, it's funny to think, actually, that was the basis for, you know, this is a chart. Buy this magazine that has the chart, man. Which is kind of what Billboard's managed to keep doing, but it seems so silly. Because it's ultimately kind of a meaningless construct. But you could say that about existence itself, I suppose, boys.
Yes. Let's wait for Godot. Let's talk about songs.
As Kierkegaard once said.
Yeah. This is officially the only podcast about music that references Kierkegaard.
I'm going to work on some food. I'm going to bring up Foucault next time.
Well, you already brought him up now, so you got to find somebody else next time. Don't double up. Yeah. Don't double up. Yeah. I can advertise Kierkegaard running on this one.
Right.
Now, let's very quickly. Let's talk
about John Stuart Mill for a while. Sorry, go on.
Come on. A while? That's going to take a lot longer than a while.
It will take a while.
No, John Stuart Mill is not John Stuart from The Daily Show's father. Just for those wondering.
Yeah, that's right.
They're not related.
His estranged father. It used to be hyphenated. Stuart Mill. And he just lopped it right off.
So
true story, guys. True story.
Talking about, by true story, he means not true. talking about artificial constructs, on the same token as charts, do awards mean anything anymore? Do they influence record companies? Do they influence airplay? Is there such a thing as airplay anymore that matters? Does it influence record buying? What do you think, Ben?
This year was peculiar because I was in the country when they did their kind of Canada Day-ish, you know, thing, and I was just, even this year, I don't know what, it's just a weird crop. I mean, for a while there, the Junos kind of got into, I feel like they caught the zeitgeist a little bit, right? There's always the kind of garbage dump categories where it's just like, I'm can you hear the car alarm? Sorry, going off out behind me.
Yes, you should stop trying to break into cars while we're doing shows.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, guys, I got a crack in here. But, you know, this year I looked at the nominees for stuff and it was just like, wow, we're really just looking for stuff to pump. And I feel like there's always that side of the Junos where you really feel like it's just the industry submission, right? And it's stuff that nobody really listened to. But they're juicing the major label product. And then there's the categories where real stuff and truth. But
does it matter?
No, that's what I mean. What I'm saying is I just felt, wow, like, I don't think anyone could be interested in this field that much. You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't represent what people are actually consuming. You know what I'm saying?
What about the Grammys? Like, you're talking about the Grammys.
Grammys is the worst waste of time. Like, the thing that irks me about the Grammys is they take themselves so seriously. Juno is always kind of fun, right? It's fun. Some of your friends play. We're a small country. It's okay. It doesn't take itself too seriously. The Grammys, where they, like, treat every, like, Alicia Keys lyric with, you know, utmost gravitas or whatever. I find it like, you know, I'm going to wear white ball gowns or black ball gowns tonight. I find that actually like has the opposite effect on me where it drives me away. And I feel like it does that to a lot of people where some people are like, oh, you know, what, did you see the Grammys last night? Where most people are like, that's absolute garbage and I don't want to go near it. Right. And I, again, it's just like, it's the field you choose, the team you choose. It's sport. I didn't have to watch it this year for the first time in 24 years or something. I didn't have to watch the Grammys. And I didn't, because I don't want to watch the Grammys. But if I have to watch them, and I have to root for someone, and it's like, oh, Carly Rae Jepsen's up for an award. I like Carly Rae Jepsen. You know, you can root. But it's not like I'm going to go, I mean, I'm not going to get destroyed by the fact that she didn't win. And I, again, it's just sport. It's sport. It shouldn't be taken too seriously, I think.
All right, what about you, Eric? Do you think that awards still have the... I mean, there was a time when awards, that was carrying, you know, that was waving a big dick. Now,
but was it even then, right? The Velvet Underground never won a Grammy. You know what I mean? It's like it catches up to you.
But those that did win awards were celebrated. They got, as Eric mentioned, they got the covers of magazines. It established, you know, it validated them as being a popular movement. But do the Grammys, do the Billboard Awards, the BET Awards, the Junos, I say that way because the Junos have never invited me to be there. Ever. All the years I'm associated with music, I'm not good enough for them. Well, they can kiss my ass. But getting back to the question.
Me neither.
You either?
Yeah. Well, I haven't hosted yet. I mean, it's time.
Well, at this point, everyone else has. But
yeah. The Moffat's hosted, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Where are they now? Eric, do you think that awards make a difference anymore?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we always see consistently whenever you put music on television, the streams go up and the sales go up, you know, in some cases on average, anywhere between 3,000% and 4,000%. I remember after Adele was selling, you know, 21 million albums of her last record and she swept the Grammy Award, she still went up in sales. And I was thinking, who doesn't have this album by now? Are you just only finding out about it? And the answer is yes. There are hundreds of thousands of people who don't listen to the radio as often as, say, you know, somebody in the music industry or us three, however much you listen to it. But that's why there are so many ballads on the Grammy Awards or the American Music Awards, because they're really playing to the middle of the road, the middle of America, because they don't need to worry about the cool hipsters in California or New York, because they're either not watching or they're hate tweeting. But I think that, you know, the proof is there.
That's all those hipsters do is hate tweet.
Well, but
hate tweeting hipsters.
Hate tweet, but it's also, you know, you want to know what really helps increase streams and sales? Dying. I mean, we see it over and over again. With
okay,
John
but
Brian.
Eric, you can only do that once. You know, the second album after that is not going to help.
If you're Nikki Six, you can die a couple of times, seemingly in the same night if you want to.
Yeah, I feel like Dave Gahan died a couple of times. So you can do it
for sure. But yeah, you know, it is a nice little pat on the back whether you're a first time nominated artist on the Junos or the Grammys. And again, it is like sport, but it's a television show first and foremost. And you know, you kind of ride the wave for the first little bit, but to an artist and a record label, it's one thing that they can never take away from you, the fact that you're Juno nominated. I still, in my press releases, you know, if an artist has never won a Juno, but they've been nominated, still to this day, I will put it in the subject heading just because I think there's something great to be a top five anywhere in music.
Well, you, the three of us all know tons of people after doing this for so long. Like, we've lots of friends who wound up nominated for even Grammys. Every friend's nominated for Grammys now. You're like, you're root for them. And it you know, there's no pretending if you're, you know, Leslie Feist and you are up for five or six Junos in your hometown of Calgary and your parents are there. And it's like, of course you're excited. I don't think, like, and you're allowed to be excited. I don't think anybody's, it's like nobody's going to go. There's only a few Godspeed You Black Emperors who kind of like piss on the award they're given. You know what I mean? It's like it's like everyone's happy to get award. But nobody lives and dies by it, right?
But I think that, you know, what we're talking about too, I think we're talking about a little bit of a larger issue with whether we're talking about the charts or award shows. Is I think a better thought process or a better question could be, not necessarily does the Billboard chart matter, but does it matter that somebody else is picking for you what the best is or what the most popular? Billboard always has a wonky way of trying to figure out. It's 1,500 scans for every sale. Why 1,500? Fuck if I know. I used to think that it was the amount of money that we tabulated for a stream versus a sale, and that actually might be accurate. But I know it's a bunch of record label people that are sitting there. Why is 50,000 gold? And if you release it after 2 years ago, it's 40,000. Why those numbers? So I think a
voodoo, man. It's all like chart voodoo.
It's all voodoo. Right. And so you end up with I think the question of does it matter that other people are continually telling us what we should be listening to and what's the best and what's number one? And does it matter to a whole generation where it's almost like a badge of honor if their artist gets torn down, because they'll stick by them and watch them rise up from the ashes again?
Well, you know, I think it was Neil Brennan, like of whom I'm a great fan. If he was on The Daily Show, maybe. Or I may be mixing up my comics, but talking about the idea of America being the best, but always being number one. So now they're number one in COVID. So not being number one is not always the best. And that was always the thing that irked me. Like once I reached a certain age where I was like, oh, just you're not number one. This sucks. Well, you know, you have that moment when you're 8 or 9. That's like, oh, no, but I like to do the Mary Jane. Well, that's not, yeah, but that I think the idea that being number one is best by consensus, according to these criteria, right, is a bit of a weird thing, right? And I think the thing that charts have found, it's like you can develop 40 or 50 different ways to make someone number one according to some criteria, so as to perpetuate the existence of charts. So people have bragging rights. It's like, well, I'm on this chart. Oh, well, we should, you know, charts are good. Look, they're happy, right? You know, at a certain point, maybe there should be a chart of charts. Maybe we should keep a chart of charts. Top ranked chart. Maybe Billboard should do a chart.
Billboard number 2 this week, chart. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's that kind of thing. Like, and if you approach it that way, it's pretty harmless. But I think its influence has waned. But obviously, back in the day when it's like, you know, guys shopping 7 inches around a different record companies in the States. And again, that was still subjective manipulation, but at least you had a kind of an aggregate idea of what's going on in different regions, right? And that's kind of useful, just from a demographic standpoint, a sociological standpoint, and also from a financial and marketing standpoint for the labels. And that's, but now at this point, right, like it's so fragmented, you can break off. You know, just the development of statistics. So it's like the development of charts has kind of rendered charts themselves.
When do you think it stopped mattering? Because I know in the book field, obviously the gold status would be number one on the New York Times bestselling chart. But I know authors that will proclaim that they're number one on Amazon in their category of social science / psychology / teenagers / females, and sell 2 copies that week, and they bought them both. But they get to walk around forevermore saying that they're a number one Amazon bestseller.
Well, but I mean, that goes for anything. That goes, and again, that goes back to my earlier statement about the day when you could just roll up, hey, here's a brick of cocaine. Would you like to report that as your number one? You know, and it's like those kind of manipulations are always, they're still there. Like it's, and it's still kind of serving the industry at its heart.
I think that go on. You were already talking.
No. I would like you to, we've taken over.
Oh no, I'm letting you talk. You're doing my work for me. But I think that, what we're coming to is that, charts, there are so many charts now that it's like when you flood the economy by printing too many dollars. It just devalues the value of each dollar. There's so many charts now, and as Eric pointed out, you know, I'm number one Amazon. You know, I was number one on Amazon, or I was number 15 on the Amazon this chart or that chart. I mean, our podcasts are in the top of iTunes Canada's politics charts. They've got a million other charts. I mean, it's great when we're being considered against our other peers that are doing the same kind of shows. But again, there's now so many charts, you can't keep track of them. So they just don't meet. I mean, everybody's been big in Japan in one way or another at this point in time. So I don't know the charts really. I see that what Eric was saying about the effect that they can have, especially for artists and for promotion and record companies knowing where to spend their dollars and things of that nature. But there's just so many of them now that it's hard to take any of them seriously. It even devalues the ones that have been around for a long time. And the question I have to ask right now is to Eric, Eric, were you a fan of Phil Collins for face value, or did you continue for No Jacket Required and onwards?
Oh, dude, I was well into all of that. I was one of the very few that owns his entire collection and all of the extended bonus versions of it. Yeah, oh, I will.
Oh, we're breaking up, Eric.
Yeah.
You're my brother, like Phil Collins.
Look, if I have any other fans out there, I will probably lose them all by saying that, you know, Peter Gabriel with Genesis is far lesser of a group than when Phil Collins was fronting
them. Genesis on the whole is crap.
Come on.
Serious.
But no.
Come on.
Dude,
I like a couple of Peter Gabriel solo albums, but
they had five.
I think I find the whole lot pretentious and unlistenable. But yeah, carry on. Defend Phil Collins.
No,
they had five number one songs. Doesn't that mean anything?
Oh, my
anything?
God, but the Invisible Touch era is ghastly.
Oh, anything after
but even Landlines Down on Broadway. Oh, can't do it, guys. I'm sorry. Are we all breaking up?
I think, well, no, I'm, no, you and I are still together, man.
Do you love Genesis, too?
No, I don't love Genesis. I don't love Genesis.
We're okay, then.
I like some early Genesis, and you know that this is the way music snobs differentiate themselves, because whenever you hear somebody say, well, I like their early stuff, you know you're talking to a music snob. It's always, well, I like their early, that if you're ever in a
I don't like any of their stuff.
If you're ever in a conversation and you don't know what they're talking, like it's music, and it's a bunch of music snobs talking, and you feel like out of place, whenever they bring up a band, just say, well, I like their early stuff, and kind of snicker.
Or the comeback album.
Yeah, kind of snicker at the end, as if like everything that came after is no good. That's what establishes you as a true music connoisseur. I did like Face Value by Phil Collins. As soon as the studio
was that
started,
the one with the Supremes cover?
No.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah, that's the second album, Ben.
Yeah.
The second album was an immediate
my
slide
dad
to the
had
toilet.
Fun.
I like In the Air Tonight. Come on, you don't like In the Air Tonight?
I like In the Air Tonight. I'm not dissing it entirely. I'm just saying no Genesis ever.
I like
ever.
In the Air Tonight, but as soon as he started with the Susu Studio and Can't Hurry Love and shit, it's like straight.
Billy, don't you lose my number. It makes me want to kill myself.
I'm right in that. Right in that. Right in that No Jacket Required stuff.
Eric, hey, how do you stay so positive about everything crappy?
Because, you made me snort laugh.
Because I'm positive that everybody else thinks it's crap.
Well, you know, I'm negative about everything, Eric. We balance each other out nicely.
Exactly.
And it is the fulcrum around which we bounce.
All right. Well, now that we've mentioned Kierkegaard and fulcrum, we fulfilled our IQ portion for this show. I think next time one of the topics we'll tackle is whether radio play matters anymore, and whether radio music on radio matters anymore at all. We'll get into that and other topics on our next Face the Music. Where can people find you guys, Eric? Where can people find you? And please leave him alone about the Phil Collins shit.
Eric to death.
Wherever there's a Phil Collins song being played, I am there. They can find me on Twitter at that Eric Alper, or visit the website anytime at thatericalper.com, or listen on SiriusXM to that Eric Alper show.
All right. Very good. Good branding. And Ben Rayner, where can people find you? In a park?
Yeah, I'm a full-time dad until my little girl goes back to daycare in September, but I am slowly moving back to work, and actually I'm suddenly terrified to have an awful lot of stuff I have to do in the next couple of weeks, which just fell in my lap, and only late nights to do it, as in after I hang up on you. But meantime, I hate Ben Rayner on Twitter, and there might be some fun stuff coming up, I can't talk about it.
Talk about fun stuff. I would love to see a reality show. I'd love to see a reality show of you raising your daughter.
It's, you know what, I'm living that reality show. It's
I would
awesome.
Love to watch that. I think that would be hilarious, because I know that she owns you.
You know what, she has spent most of the last, 5 months with me since the middle of March, and she talks to me. I talk a lot. We gab basically on the same level now, and it's kind of freaky. I guess she's got a really good sense of humor. Today we have a band called This is her name. We have a band called Space Toilet. and we have a psych band, too. So, like, the lyric is, Space Toilet, a toilet from space. We have arrived to receive your waste. And it's like, this stuff goes on all day now. And I think her mother is horrified and probably pretty glad she's going back to preschool. But yeah, we'll be a good comedy team. We worked on a Laurel and Hardy-esque routine today to fool my long-suffering partner about where we picked up a water bottle in the GO station elevator. And it's like, hey, Polly, I found a bottle of water in the GO station elevator. And she's like, oh, great. Oh, my God, this is pee. You know, so this is the level of comedy we're working on.
Well, it's going to be great. I can't wait. Maybe comedy albums will make a big comeback.
Yeah, it's very Laurel and Hardy.
All right, well, and that movie that came out about them didn't do very well, did it?
I didn't see that movie.
Nobody
saw it. That's probably why it didn't do very well. Ah, man. It wasn't on the charts?
No,
it was the
number one movie in America during COVID.
No, yeah. You know what the number one movie
was? It was the number one movie in, like, Botswana for like 3 days.
You know what the number
according
one movie,
to a Billboard chart.
The number one movie a few weeks ago in America was The Empire Strikes
Empire
Back.
Strikes Back. Yeah, it made like $67 at a drive-in. Yeah.
All right,
exactly.
Guys.
There we go.
All right. I will talk to you guys. I can be found at Ed the Sock, and soon we'll be announcing the name of our music channel because it was going to be FU Music, and I decided against it. And I'm playing with some names now. I'll probably ask you two gents to weigh in on some of the finalists. But we'll be announcing that soon and announcing who the new VJs are. And I expect that this will be big and huge because it's about time we had a music service like Much Music used to be with good VJs that curates music that is good, not music that is heavily marketed. I'm looking forward to this. And I think you guys are too. So
I would be happy to see that happen.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening. So keep your eyes open, everybody. Until then, I'm Ed the Sock, and I don't have a tagline to end this show, so I'm just going to say what Steve McGarrett used to say at the end of all the classic Hawaii Five-O's. Aloha. FU stands for us, you and me, and this is FUN, the FU Network.